This is an RTRFM podcast. RTRFM is a community organisation and relies on volunteer and listener support. To learn more about what we do, visit rtrfm.com.au.
Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. The most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Hello and welcome to the Movie Squad podcast, your weekly fix of movie reviews that previously aired on RTRFM 92.1. You're joined by me, Simon Morato.
And me, Cecilia Allen.
That's right. Tristan Fiddler is off on assignment this week. Tristan, we wish you well. But he'll be back soon. But Cecilia, it was great to have you on this week's episode with Taylor Strano, our regular collaborator on Breakfast. We were able to chat about a new, I won't say the new because there's too many of them, but it's a new Nicolas Cage film called Pig, which I think left us quite surprised.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very interesting film, which took a direction I think most people won't expect.
Yes. What else did we cover?
We also covered Palazzo di Cozzo, the film about, I suppose, a furniture empire built by Franco Cozzo.
I love this pronunciation. I love this pronunciation. We talk a bit about pronunciation in the episode. You'll also hear Tristan and I review The Killing of Two Lovers from back in July. We reviewed it during the Revelation Perth International Film Festival, but it's now actually arriving in cinemas across Australia. So we wanted to make sure you heard our review of what we think is one of the best films of the year. So stay tuned for reviews of those films. And if you want to catch us live and email the studio or text in at 0405 921 921 and get on the spot feedback, tune in 7:30 a.m. Western Standard Time in WA on Friday mornings to hear Movie Squad with Taylor.
I'm looking for a truffle pig. Someone stole her.
I don't understand.
Tell him who you are.
You made the right choice being out there in the woods. There's nothing here for you anymore. There's really nothing here for most of us. Buy yourself a new pig.
It is 7:30. It's your Friday morning, and that means it is time to do Movie Squad. This week, joining us are Cecilia and Simon. Hello, folks.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming back and doing more Movie Squad this week, Cecilia. We're going to get stuck into your film in a moment, but we are going to start, Simon, with, can I say, one of the biggest releases of the week?
Definitely.
Okay. Well, I mean, that'll depend on the review, I guess.
Of the year.
Of the year.
Let's just go for it, right?
All right. Well, like, we're almost at the end now. There can't be that many more, surely.
No, that's right. and you know what? It's RTRFM. It's Movie Squad. In our circle, this is one of the biggest releases of the year. It's Pig, the new Nicolas Cage film. And that's a title that lasts for about 3 weeks in the world of Nicolas Cage, because there's always a new Nicolas Cage film coming out. Cecilia, we were talking about how his sheer volume of output is absurd. He must be in the hundreds by now in his filmography.
Yeah, I did a quick search, and at least 118 is the figure that I'm getting.
Oh, wow.
But I swear I checked a few weeks ago, and it was 117, so it's gone up one.
Oh my God.
Since I last checked.
Another film was announced.
Like, is Nicolas Cage just living off royalties from his old films in like the 90s and early 2000s, and now is just doing whatever he feels like it's fun and good?
I think he's got a tax debt.
Yeah, I would say it's almost the opposite of that.
Oh, no, he's got some kind of tax debt, I think, that he has to pay for. And also
it.
He's got a love of cars, I believe. Maybe that
he is look, for a million reasons, Nicolas Cage is fun to Google, but and I don't know the full details, but if you look into the history, there was a castle that was owned and then not owned by him.
I believe a
skeleton at some point. He used to collect, like, dinosaur skulls. Maybe that's apocryphal.
Okay.
Maybe it wasn't dinosaur skulls. Maybe it was, like, a chicken skull or something like that. Nonetheless, do your own research into Nicolas Cage's financial situation. But regardless, he makes a lot of movies. He always, to his credit, you know, throws himself whole hog, pun not intended, into his movies. But it is a bit of a lucky dip. I watched just this week a movie called Willy's Wonderland, another 2021 release, where he plays a janitor who fights a bunch of animatronic dolls that come to life. at a sort of Chuck E. Cheese-esque restaurant.
Just no.
Well, and very much no. It was unwatchably bad. It was such a terribly made and executed film, regardless of his commitment. So you're always a bit worried when Nicolas Cage is in a film, but there's also promise of it being one of the good Nicolas Cage movies. And Pig really could have gone either way based on its premise. He plays Rob, a former chef of very high esteem in Portland who, after some personal tragedy, moved into the Oregon wilderness to live in isolation with his prized truffle pig. And he lives a very simple life. He lets the pig do what it does, and he sells the truffles to Amir, a sort of enterprising young entrepreneur played by Alex Wolff, who people may know from Hereditary and a few other films. He sells him the truffles, and Amir takes them to the city to sell them onwards to other restaurants that are really living in the shadow of Chef Rob's legacy. But then one night, mystery assailants attack, they beat up Rob, and they take the pig. So he forces Amir to drive him into the big city so he can confront the restaurant industry, his ex-colleagues, and find out who took his pig. Now, it sounds like a John Wick-esque kind of premise. And for a moment, it feels like it's heading in that direction. There is a bit of early violence and some really interesting direction from Michael Sarnowski making his feature film debut. But this ultimately becomes more of a quiet, meditative film. Cecilia, what were your expectations going into Pig?
Yeah, after watching the trailer, I did think this was going to be like a revenge-fueled, violent tale of revenge, really, because I think there is one scene in the trailer where you do see Nick Cage with a little bit of blood on his face, but there is very little violence in this film at all, very little. And he's so subdued in his role. And usually, you know, Nick Cage plays an 11 in anything he does, right? But he's really toned it back. So I honestly thought this was that revenge-fueled, tale. But I love the way he navigates trying to find his pig. I love that. I love how he's so calm. And
he is. It's really and because Nick Cage, and he is a very self-aware actor. He knows what people go to see Nick Cage films for. That's why he makes a movie like Willy's Wonderland, right? But he also knows that people are waiting for him to explode at any minute. And because he is so restrained in this movie, it adds this layer of tension. But, you know, it would be inaccurate to sell it as a thriller. It's really a lot of things and a lot of really good things. On the one hand, again, after it sort of diverts from this sort of this John Wick-esque style of movie, it becomes a sort of surreal satire of the restaurant industry that's quite funny and very weird as well, as you learn about underground fight clubs and people sort of being driven to madness by their pursuit of their passion. But then it also becomes a sort of meditation on the natural world and how everything we've erected around the natural world is basically false and pointless. Mm-hmm. And then it builds to this climax, which I promise we won't give away. But it becomes this extension of almost the final scene from Ratatouille, you know, where someone eats food and is taken back to another time. And Pig is ultimately about the value of our experiences and our relationships and how these things matter, even if the world around us and the fakeness of the world we live in is coming to an end. So a really fascinating movie, a beautiful lead performance. I liked Alex Wolff as well. He's sort of very sweaty and nervous in this movie, but he's sort of a good foil. And there's a couple of other character actors who pop up that I won't spoil. But Taylor, Nick Cage, Truffle Pigs, you know, what kind of movie do you want to see when those elements are thrown together? And is meditation on the natural world among those genres?
I think that's like more than you paid for kind of element to this film. I definitely want to see this. I love Nick Cage. I love truffles. I love food. So it's like a win-win. I am a little bit disappointed they didn't choose to name this like Taken 3 The Bacon or something like along those lines.
Oh, sure. It had to be Taken 4. There is a Taken 3 already.
Taken 4.
I'm sorry.
You can tell that I don't watch any of those films. Is there like nice food cinematography going on in this film, or is it like more just about the people?
No, well, yes and no. There is some beautiful food, and it ends with a climactic cooking scene, if we can call it that. But there's also really nice food like haute cuisine that is sort of mocked, you know? So I wouldn't describe it, you know, it's not Big Night. It's not a food movie. And if anything, it's trying to puncture the idea of what's being cooked up in fancy schmancy restaurants, you know? But so it's not necessarily a film that I was salivating over, but there's that element in it. And there's so much going on in Pig. It was a really, I think it's a really special movie, Cecilia. I don't know where it ranks among Nick Cage films for you, or if it was what you wanted from it going in. But I thought this was such a unique pleasure of a movie, and 90 minutes. Every time a movie's 90 minutes, you've got to give it up.
No, I absolutely loved this film. I loved the tone it took. I loved that it was more meditative. I loved that scene, you know, the Ratatouille scene that you mentioned where there's that cooking and that, you know, element of memory and whatnot. But I love the way, yeah, he just confronts that Nick Cage as that's his way of kind of not seeking revenge, but trying to get what he wants.
Well, it's this question of like, and again, this is not spoiling it, but it's just the question of, is it revenge or is it a gift? You know,
yeah,
or the idea that revenge
point.
Is a dish best served cold. You know, it's this climactic moment, and the film did not end any way that I anticipated it would. And I don't think, even based on this review, people will know what to expect from the end of this film. And I hope they leave going, how did it resolve? What did I watch? But then I think in time, it will be so, you know, fulfilling. So it's not a movie you leave stuffed with, but over time will really, really resonate nicely.
I love all the food puns you've managed to throw this morning. Good
unplanned.
Job.
You know I don't work off notes. This is all off the dome.
It's very good, very impressive. Pig is out now. If you're going to see it, if you have seen
in
it.
In cinemas,
yes. Let us know. 0405 921 921. Movie Squad back for part two in just a moment.
Se i migliori mobili volete comprare da Franco Cozzo dovete andare a Nord Melbourne Footers Guy.
What the hell is this? Who is this guy?
Entering our homes. Who is he?
It's that style that's made Franco Cozzo one of Melbourne's latest and most unusual cult figures.
He's become a household word because of his commercials on morning and late night TV.
They're gone crazy with this commercial.
He's so good, believe in me.
My God!
He leveraged his lack of knowledge of English into an advantage.
I don't really think you look very comfortable here. Let me just fix something up for you. All right, Stan, bring that out here.
You're on Movie Squad, Taylor with you, as to Simon and Cecilia. Before we talk about the second film this week, I have to let you know, yesterday on Science with Commander Cat, we had a look at the Ig Nobel Prize recipients, which is research, kind of like the Nobel Prizes, a little bit weird. Some of it we don't know how it got cleared for ethics approval. There was a prize that was awarded, I think it was maybe in physics, which I don't know how this links up. They studied the film on a screen in movie theatres and the stress that it induces to produce body odour.
That is very interesting. I know of a related study / public relations exercise where in anticipation of the new Halloween movie, Halloween Kills, I believe the studio is going to run a similar kind of stress test on viewers. But what movies were they using to evaluate the BO?
It didn't say. It wasn't explicit in that, but it was done in a couple of different countries. And my only conclusion was, like, it's got to be Uncut Gems if that ever had a theatre release.
That's a great question. Like, what is the stinkiest movie to emit BO? I mean, Uncut Gems, like, kind of, it almost
stress.
Smells bad,
yeah.
Right? As a film, as great as it is, Cecilia, what would be the stinkiest movie in your perspective?
I remember being really nervous in Hereditary at the end, where
it gets
kind of really dark, and Alex Wolff, who I can't remember his character name, but he's kind of in the house alone, and his mum, played by Toni Collette, lingering around. And,
yes.
And I remember being really nervous in that film.
Yeah, Hereditary would be right up there on the stress stakes. Yeah. Thank you, Science.
Yeah, thank you, Science. If you want to have a listen back, that's on the RTRFM website right now. Our second film this morning, though, Cecilia, takes a completely different turn. We're going to talk about an Australian documentary.
Yes, Palazzo di Cozzo. I hope I've pronounced that. It hasn't got the Italian flair.
Taylor, you want to give it a crack?
Oh, I don't. I think you should, though, Simon.
Well, I'm assuming it's like Palazzo di Cozzo.
Oh, yes, that's beautiful. the reason I didn't attempt that is I would just stuff it up completely. But I do like to watch documentaries about people and events, particularly people I know nothing about. And this one's about the journey of Franco Cozzo, who I knew nothing about. Do you guys guys know this gentleman at all?
I'd never heard of him prior to the documentary's sort of announcement, Taylor.
I don't know him personally, but I'm aware of his work, and I'll explain a little bit more of that after you've sort of given us the premise of this one.
Excellent. Cecilia. So he's a furniture salesman, so this film journeys his kind of journey from Sicily to Melbourne in the 50s as a young 21-year-old, and eventually the fruition and success of his furniture empire, if you like. So he started out as a salesman, like a door salesman knocking on doors, and he doesn't speak a word of English when he arrives, and he kind of pinpoints the houses where he thinks Italians might live in order to get sales. And eventually, yeah, he builds on that, and he dabbles in car salesman as a car salesman as well, and then eventually furniture. And I think the reason he's so iconic is because of his advertising. And it was plastered across Melbourne TVs in the 80s. And you'll kind of remember, if you've seen any of them, that grand sale, grand sale, grand sale. And because he doesn't really speak much English, a lot of his advertising was in Italian, Greek and English. So it was just cut pieces of him speaking, yeah, different languages. So people really began to know him as this really big personality, and I think people loved him or they hated him, and he even spoke of running for politics at one point, and yeah, he was interviewed a lot, and he really sold this kind of classic Italian bespoke furniture, which I think, you know, Italian people really loved. It really reminded, you know, migrants of home. So for a really long time he was really successful, but unfortunately over the years that furniture he didn't really keep up with the times. He's still sells that really classic stuff that, you know, you would imagine the Queen would have in her home, if that makes sense, that really kind of fancy.
It's like that Baroque sort of style.
Yeah, Baroque, yeah. So, yeah, he hasn't really kept up with the times in that respect, so I don't know how well he's doing at the moment. He does have a few showrooms still left in Melbourne. But, you know, the documentary also goes into other parts of his life as well. You know, he's got 10 children. He had 2 wives. You know, his son was jailed for drug trafficking at one point. So that's quite an interesting thing. Well, it kind of just touches on that, moves on pretty quick.
Yeah.
So, but look, I think Franco is such an interesting character. I quite like his personality. He's a showbiz kind of guy. I think he would have made it really well in that. But yeah, I think I do quite like examining how a documentary comes together, you know, the footage that's used, the music, the tone of it. And I don't think there was anything necessarily, you know, special about this one, the wow factor, but I did like the subject.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think it's interesting, and I haven't seen this film yet, but like you kind of know who this guy is before you've even seen the film, because even if you've never seen the ads, you can think of WA Salvage, Craft Decor in WA, like all these sort of, you know, these spokespeople for their own businesses and that sort of template of an ad. And I think of even a documentary called Winnebago Man from a few years ago about a sort of, I think he was American or Canadian, I can't recall, but again, a guy that sort of became infamous, viral before online virality existed, for his commercial persona. Taylor, what is this story you've got, or what is your relationship to a Franco?
I feel like it's been built up way more than it actually is. So yeah, you're right. Everybody has like an Uncle Luigi from WA Salvage,
yes,
like an Uncle Franco somewhere in their life if you're Italian. I looked on the website this morning because there is, I use the word website very loosely for this furniture store because some of the links don't really go anywhere. You'll be glad to know, Cecilia, there is a Contempo collection of furniture. I'm not sure how modern that actually makes it. But I was looking through the furniture and there were some pieces. I was like, I have totally seen these before. And I have, because they live in the Inaloo mansion that my Zia and Zio live in. So,
wow.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know if it's the exact same, but it's like definitely that distinct like Italian swirls and gold and cream There's like some floral going on.
I wonder if it's a Cozzo.
If it's a Cozzo.
Is it an original Cozzo?
It's a Cozzo.
But that's a good point. I mean, Melbourne and, you know, Lygon Street in particular in that era, like, you know, it's such a strong migrant Italian community. Mm. But the same goes here. My parents were migrants from Sicily as well. And I think, you know, anyone who is of that European descent will probably recognise a couch or two, a sort of a valance as being, whether it's a Cozzo or original or not, it'll look very familiar.
I love the idea of like Franco Cozzo being on the Footscray Council as well. If that's like you said, like there's like a run for politics in there
yeah,
somewhere.
Yeah, I think he was hoping to dabble in that. I don't think it ever got anywhere. I don't think people really, they either loved him or hated him.
Did either of you watch that Tina Arena film that came out maybe last year, Arranged? Which was about like arranged Italian marriages in Australia.
Oh no, I didn't. I didn't see it. For a second. I was like, how did I miss a Tina Arena film? But I didn't see that one. Did you?
I did see it, and I loved it. But I think I only loved it because there was so much similarity in what you can like kind of take from your own background or your own context. So I wonder if this is maybe the entryway for people who don't sort of have that Italian family background context.
Mm, yeah, perhaps. I think, yeah, it's fascinating. I love Italian culture. I love Italian food. And I like Italian furniture too.
Now you do, yeah.
Are we going to see some Cozzo in your home?
I do. I'm really old school. I don't like modern stuff. I like, you know, the traditional classic stuff. I would love to fill my home with Cozzo.
In case the Queen ever visits.
Exactly. Mm. You never know.
I'll put you in touch with Zia Katia. She's got some stuff here.
Excellent.
Hey, Alex.
Yeah?
What do you call a pile of kittens?
What?
A meowton.
Come
on, Dad.
Meowton! Live my life painted in a corner.
You working?
Yeah.
This early?
Yeah, Dad. Stop digging.
You think we're doing the right thing?
David, I love you. You love me. We're trying to figure this out. By the
time I'm listening, Dad.
Love is a feeling, and feelings, they move in, they move out. Darling,
it already... Mom's cheating on you.
All right, you're listening to Movie Squad. Tristan and Simon join us this morning. Tristan, we're going to turn our attention now to a nice, big, chunky film as part of Revelation Film Festival.
The Killing of Two Lovers, which is an American independent drama. It's directed by a guy called Robert Macho-Ian. I'm butchering the pronunciation there. But basically, he lives in Utah, where he's a teacher or teaches film, and he filmed The Killing of Two Lovers in Utah. And it really, the landscape is quite a character in the movie. It's a flat landscape of plains with hills in the distance and a small country town where everyone kind of knows each other and is kind of either lives too close near each other or far apart. And this movie opens up with a scene. I mean, talk about Chekhov's gun. We see two lovers sleeping in bed, a man and a woman, and standing over them is a bearded guy with a gun in his hand. And this guy is David, played by Clayne Crawford. And he hears a noise in the bathroom and bolts out of the room and then runs away, but turns up to a house down the road, basically, where he looks after his ailing father. So that's quite a kind of a confronting first scene, this promise of violence, and it hangs over the whole film, which is quite a tense, emotional drama, which is all about a separation. And Clayne Crawford is an actor that I was not necessarily familiar with, but I did hear about because he was part of the Lethal Weapon television show, which kind of imploded in a lot of kind of hostility and tension. I think he was sacked from it. So, I don't know, Simon, are you familiar with him as an actor, Clayne Crawford?
No, I only know the stories as well where he and Damon Wayans Sr. Sort of clashed on the set. Lots of different disputes about his behavior and his potential penchant for, like, outbursts, which, weirdly enough, do kind of inform this film, I think to its... to its betterment, to know that there's this character who, throughout the movie, besides that opening scene, seems very reasonable, seems actually quite lovely, but we as the audience have this additional information that he's a dangerous person and potentially a toxic one as well.
Yeah, and this is a film that he has helped produce, and maybe he's better off in kind of independent cinema rather than network television. And yeah, he gives a great performance. I mean, yeah, he plays a man who's separated from his wife, Nikki, played by Sepetiye Myfi. And she started seeing another man called Derek, played by Chris Coy. Both of these actors are actually recognized from the HBO show The Deuce. But, you know, they have children. They have about, I think, 4 children. When he's with them, when he talks to her, when he picks up the kids to take them to school, he seems very reasonable, and he's very kind of affable, and his teenage daughter is telling him, you've got to fight more, you've got to save this marriage, and he's like, I'm doing the best that I can. But then when we see him alone, he's got this gun, and he's kind of brimming with this kind of violence, with this anger. So this is a film that is, it's a buzzword, but it is about toxic masculinity, and it does touch on kind of situations of separation and domestic, potential violence. But what a film in that it is under 90 minutes. It's around the 80-minute mark, but it is, I think the filmmaking here is so, like, it just hits you over the head in how good it is. Like, the use of distant shots, the use of close-ups. I think these are some of the best close-ups I've seen in a movie, in the way that they kind of look at the characters' faces as almost like these maps. And it is a film that goes, it uses long takes. It sort of veers from kind of moments of tenderness and sensitivity to these moments of, like, real tension, not helped by the fact that the score is more sound design and is really a lot of sounds of car doors slamming and engine starting. That's the music that's in this film. So I saw this, I think, after Simon, and had heard the great word that Simon had to say about this. So I was kind of wanting to see what this was like, but I was really impressed by this film and thought it is a very strong independent drama with some great performances.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Simon, what's your sort of take?
Well, not to sound like a broken record, but this is my second favourite film of the year so far. It was usurped by Bo Burnham's Inside. But yeah, Tristan, everything you're touching on there is exactly how I feel about the movie. And, the filmmaking is just superb here. And even that opening scene, I mean, I love a movie where you learn so much just from the camera in the first 5 minutes. I mean, the first 5 minutes tell the story here. You've got this man standing over his ex-wife's, or his wife's, but separated wife's bed with a gun. He hears the kid. He exits through the window, gets in his car. Oh, no, he doesn't. He just travels to his house, and as the camera follows him, you realize, oh, he's down the road. You can see his wife's house from his dad's house. And that just, this tension that now carries over the entire movie. He has a gun. He can see everything that's kind of going on. And the way that in the film, everyone kind of blames the wife for the breakup. No one else can kind of tell why she wants to separate from this nice man. And I think I've read, some people, some detractors, again, who have said this movie sort of glorifies, domestic violence, or rather it kind of apologizes or says, hey, even an abusive husband can be a nice guy. I don't think this movie is saying that at all. I totally appreciate people who are coming at it from that perspective. But I think we as the audience are given that extra information to know that sometimes what is happening inside of a marriage isn't public knowledge. But we're allowed into this mindset of this man and know he is dangerous, even though all the other evidence he's presenting to the world says otherwise. So I really found it powerful. I thought the ending was fantastic. Some people will be troubled by the ending or maybe just unmoored by it. I was unmoored in a really satisfying way. I think it's a beautifully made and told film.
There you have it for another week, our reviews of Pig and Palazzo di Cozzo. both in cinemas now, or if you're listening to this in the future, who knows where it's available. Do your own research on that front. Cecilia, thank you so much for being part of Movie Squad. You're a regular fixture here. You're more than a bench member.
Thanks for having me. I love coming in and chatting about films.
You can subscribe to the Movie Squad podcast if you haven't already, as well as all the other great RTRFM podcasts. Also, if you are a subscriber, please rate and review, share it with your friends, get people listening. And again, tune in on Fridays at 7:30 a.m. To hear us live and send in your feedback, good or bad, ideally good. You know, we're critics, but we actually can't take much flack. But thank you once again to Taylor and everyone at RTRFM, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this RTRFM podcast. RTRFM is a community organisation and relies on volunteer and listener support. Visit rtrfm.com.au for more podcasts and other great content, as well as details on how you can support the station. You can also download our app and access RTRFM anytime and anywhere on your mobile device.